All right, folks, here we go. This is Dojo Talks. Today, we are previewing the 2024 FIDE candidates. We're going to rank all of the participants from 1 through 8 in terms of who we think has the best chances to actually win. We did this back in 2022 for that candidates tournament. If you guys want to check out that show and how accurately we all predicted everything. But yeah, here we go again. Actually, personally, let me just say I'm very excited for this candidates in Toronto. I feel like it's got a bunch of the best players in the world and some very, very fresh blood, which I think is fantastic to see. And personally, I'm just going to say, like, I'm most excited for the like the two Indian juniors, like Gukesh and Prague. I just think it's going to be so fun to see them play. Anyway, what are your guys' initial thoughts on the World Championship candidates?
I'm excited to see it as well. That's not always the case for every tournament. So yeah, I'm excited to see it. Like you, very excited for the Indian kids to see how they do. I'm like a mega fan of them, of each of them. I'm ready. Jesse, you going to be watching?
Oh yeah, this is going to be a fun one. There's a lot of wild cards in this. A lot of people who could play spoiler in this lineup. And to me, first of all, unless somehow Ding returns to form, he's been in terrible form, this is in many ways a world championship tournament because Ding has truly fallen off the map. We don't know why. I don't understand, but that's the way it looks. Also, I guess in terms of who I'm rooting for, I do feel Caruana is playing the best chess at the moment. But I feel like since I want Magnus to come back, I feel like the psychological needle that would bring him back is if Naka were to win this thing and then beat Ding, it would be impossible for Magnus to deal with it psychologically that Naka was up there. And that's how we would bring him back. That would be the way. So that's what I think is at stake in this tournament.
Wow, that's how interesting. I mean, a lot of people are saying, you know, maybe Faruja would be the player to kind of pull Magnus in. You're mm-hmm. saying Naka.
I
feel like either one of those two would be tempting. There's nothing stopping Magnus. Every time we get into Magnus, there's nothing stopping Magnus from organizing an exhibition match against one of these guys. It doesn't have to be official world championship. You know, they can always set it up, and I'm sure there'll be people willing to provide a very, very nice prize fund to see that happen.
Oh, I think what would happen, though, is if Naka wins, then Magnus would actually go through the, you know, he'd qualify for this tournament, and then he'd have to win it. Then he'd have to challenge Naka, you know? There you go.
Seems a little, I don't know, seems a little petty.
I mean, it's also hard. It's hard to imagine. I understand the idea that it would, you know, be like a thing in his throat that's bothering him all day, every day, but... Mm-hmm. I don't know, he might be too proud to like go back on what he said and come up through the candidates. I don't know.
I mean, think about it now. Ding is not playing well at all. No one's thinking of him as world champion. I'm certainly not, you know? Yeah. So there's no touching of the coconuts there for the guy, you know? Yeah. And he's like, classical chess, so what? I'll go play these other things. But if you get someone, if people are saying Faruja, yeah, that would hurt him a little bit. But like the real psychological twister would be if Naka won. So anyways, that's what I see at stake here. And I do want, ultimately, I feel it's like a reunification of the title when we get Magnus back. Right. You know, he's eventually going to lose to one of these Indian kids. I don't know when it's going to happen, but, you know, he needs to come back to like make the world championship whole again.
So I want to pick up on one thing you said that also, for me, makes this candidates very interesting because I think a lot of players saw the last world championship match, Nepo versus Ding, and they saw like the level of play in that match, which across mm-hmm. the board, everyone, like every commentator was saying like not a high level, tons of mistakes, like lots mm-hmm. of nerves, lots of stress. And I feel like a lot of these players, which like the top guys like Caruana and Naka just like saw that and like, oh my God, like this could have been my chance. This still is my chance mm-hmm. if these guys are playing the world championship match like this. It's not like first you have to win this grueling tournament and then you have to beat Magnus, right? It's a little bit different. I think even Nepo, I would imagine, still feels like he absolutely has a chance based on how the last match went. He was extremely close. Last time I feel like I remember this was probably 2013, would be my opinion, when Vichy was the world champion, but Magnus was already number one for a couple of years. Lavon Aronian was still super strong. I feel like there was a couple of players that were like whoever wins this, it felt like they would then be a favorite against the incumbent. And that's kind of how it feels like right now. Actually, I was thinking about it. Like, if any one of the players wins, just right. based on the current state, I would view them as a favorite against Dink. Right. Including nope. Ambasov. Like, if he nope. somehow wins the tournament, the level yeah. of chess he would have to show to do so
yeah.
uh-huh. would have to be, you know, incredibly impressive. That I would then say, okay, he's now a top player.
Yeah, it would be. It's hard to imagine a scenario where you win this tournament and don't look like a boss at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough tournament.
And nothing against Ding. People are always very upset about Ding. I hope for Ding to return to his absolute peak form, but he just hasn't shown it yet. I think we all want him to play as best as he possibly can, but like that's just not what has been happening lately.
The other thing that could, you know, hook Magnus in, to continue on Jesse's theme, is that inevitably at some point somebody's going to come for the number one rating spot in classical chess, right? Mm-hmm. Inevitably. And it's happened to him in Blitz and Rapid, and he did not like it. But those fluctuate much more. You know, people go up 100 points in a day at the World Blitz Championship, or down 100 points. But when it happens in classical chess, that could be something that Magnus feels like he needs to respond to. Like, he might not yet feel like it's time to relinquish number one. And I think Naka and Fabi, I haven't done any chess numbers calculations, but I think Naka or Fabi, if they won this tournament with a couple wins and then won the world championship with a couple wins, they'd be right knocking on his door.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if Ding shows up in bad form. I mean, normally in a match, once you're ahead 2 points, you know, you don't need to rack up more games. But if Ding shows up in bad form and Caruana or Naka just decides to, you know, as people now say, farm, that could be another thing that pulls Magnus in.
Okay. All right, shall we get into it?
Let's go.
Okay, so for the podcast listeners, all right, we have a little chart here. David set this up. I believe you listed the players in just current FIDE rating order from what it looks like.
Yes.
Okay. And we're just going to rank them starting from the number 8 seed to the number 1 seed, and then we'll average those out, and we'll all have each of our own rankings. So we'll try to keep it, you know, listener friendly, but if you want to see the chart, then definitely watch on YouTube, youtube.com/chessdojo.
Or okay. You can tell Alexa to play it for you, and she will.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Okay. All right, number one, all right, number 8, Nizar Abasov, qualified through the FIDE World Cup, the Magnus wildcard. Technically, he took Magnus's mm-hmm. spot after Magnus, you know, confirmed that he was not playing.
Right.
Jesse, now, you're on. Where are you?
Are we going to do our snake thing? Is that how we're going to do it, or how are we
going to do it? We could do a snake thing.
All right. Okay, I guess I'll go first then, because it looks like I'm the first of the snake. So I don't think Abasov should be here, and is a little bit lucky, played the tournament in Azerbaijan, home country. And not only did his rating never cross 2,700, but then after that tournament of his life, he has dropped dramatically. So now he's even fallen outside of the world 100. I think he's 110 or something right now. So it does not look good. And then something I think we're going to do is for our top score and our bottom score, we're going to try to guess how many points they will end with. And I'm going to say 4. And just for reference, in the last candidates tournament, the lowest score was Duda and Rapport, both at 5.5. Now, by the way, we're going to laugh at ourselves for a second here. We all, when we did this in 2022, we all said that that Radjabov was going to be in 8th place, and that dude came in 3rd place. So we were wrong. But if I had to do it all over again, I would still put him there. I still put him there. Yeah. But this one, I feel like Abasov is clearly the one who is weaker than the rest. David.
Yeah.
I think you got to hit enter, Jesse, to lock it
there
in.
You go.
Yeah.
I think anyone who goes back and checks our predictions from 2022 is going to conclude that they should not listen to this episode of Dojo Talks. Which, honestly, would be a very fair conclusion. It's the conclusion I would make. Because like Jesse, mm-hmm. I would again rank Raj above 8th all over again. And if somebody wanted to not listen to us anymore when we predict things, probably good conservation of their time. That said, I also think Abasov will finish dead last, clear last place, no trouble, no tie. And so, yeah, I think 4.5 points. That's what I calculated when I went down the line with all the points.
Alrighty. Yeah, so for me, so my list, I'm just ranking the players in terms of kind of like their chances of winning, if that makes sense. So I'm not like predicting like, here's who I think, like this is what I think is going to be the final listing, like 1 through 8, mm-hmm. but just more like who I think has the least number of chances to the most number of chances, like from an odds perspective.
So all you're caring about really is who's going to win the event. You're telling us here's the win probabilities.
Yeah, well, here's how I rank them with, how likely I think they are to win it. But yeah, I've got Abasov 8th. I just feel like there's no other place that is really rational. You know, I wish him the best, but like, okay, we got to be realistic, and rating is super important. I was also thinking 4.5 points. I don't know. I just had that number in my mind. Okay, hopefully it's not too controversial. This feels like more of a lock than Rajabov. Look, predictions are predictions, okay? No one actually knows what's going to happen. If all the predictions were obvious, we'd all have the same predictions, you know? I mean, the point is that it's fun to make predictions, and that's it. I think if people are looking at this like investment advice, I would advise them to not do that.
Mm-hmm. So you're not licensed to provide investment advice.
Exactly.
Or tournament predictions.
Exactly. Okay, let's go to Vidit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I've got Vidit. He's 4th on my list.
Whoa.
Which I think is surprising.
That is surprising.
But you know what? I really just like what I've seen from him in the last, quite a bit. He was like amazing in the Grand Swiss, and I liked how he was playing in, I think it was Wycon Zay. I just think he's like a super solid player, and he's been trending up, and he's kind of like at his peak right now, I believe. And he's like super motivated from everything I've seen from him. Not that other players aren't, but just, I don't know. I got a good feeling about him. He ended up 4th for me.
Wow. Okay. Let me check my notes. Never mind. 7th place or Vidit. I think that my algorithm for predictions is I look at a player's last tournament that they played, just like one tournament back, performance rating. And then I just rank them based on that. So very, very strong recency bias probably in my way of seeing things. Like I see someone play a good tournament and I think they're on fire. They're full of confidence. You know, they just keep going. And I see somebody have like a bad tournament. It's like, it's done. So as you said, it had 2 really good tournaments. And then right before the candidates, he played in Prague and, had 1 really bad tournament. And I saw that and thought, yeah. Dumpster fire. No chance. And if you'd asked me this 1 month ago, I would have said, oh my gosh, you know, he's in such good form, you know, he's shooting up. But now it's over for him. So he'll get to play the candidates tournament once. It'll be, you know, a fun highlight of his career, and then we'll hear no more.
It's just a practice event. People often have bad events before they win the candidates. I feel like Fabi, like he did bad in that year's YCon Zay. And I remember Vichy, like no one was expecting Vichy to win the candidates.
Yeah.
He won it.
What I said is silly, and he's a great guy, so I shouldn't have said something that mean, but I'm sort of exaggerating to make fun of myself, but I am putting him at seventh.
Okay, yeah. To me, Vidit is also obviously seventh. And
all right, we'll see.
So the thing about Vidit, okay, let's just say one of the great storylines of this tournament is we have the rise of the Indians. And I think probably we have consensus that we're going to see an Indian world champion in the next 10 years, right? We have just this huge crop of Indians and they're really strong. And where Vidit is dramatically different than Gukesh and Prague, for example, is Gukesh and Prague are 17 and 18. And Vidit is 29. He's kind of stabilized what I would say his strength. So he's around 27, 30, right? And that's just, first of all, much lower rated than the younger kids. But younger kids are also a little bit more of a wild card. You don't know exactly what's going to happen. They haven't shown their true strength yet. Whereas Vidit, I feel like, right, we know where this is a great fighter. I really admire his fighting skills, you know. But, you know, he's not on the level of everyone else in this tournament. So definitely Sam.
Mm-hmm. Also good endgame technique, fantastic feel for where to put the pieces, mm-hmm. you know, great positional mm-hmm. touch.
Good opening prep. Yeah, won the Grand Swiss, you know, where like all these guys were playing. But okay, let's go on.
Honestly, I think he's overall still improving. Rather late in life compared to other players. So that's one very interesting thing is he's steadily kept improving when most people at a certain age, you would say, well, that was probably their peak.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So. Nepo also, we got to talk to somebody who peaked much later. So that's also an interesting thing. And, you know, a lot of what is the interesting things, too, about looking back at this list and then the 2022 is really what you're doing in a lot of ways in, when you're making these predictions is you're just talking about your priors, your prejudices. This is about the way chess players develop and yada, yada, you know, things like that.
Okay. So for the listeners, we've all got Abbasov at 8. You guys both rank Vidit at 7. I did 4 for an average of 6. And now it's up to Jesse to rank Gukesh next.
Yeah, Gukesh, these next couple, I would say, except for my top two, I feel like this next bunch is pretty tight together. So, you know, if Kosi was talking about ranking it based on percentiles, in that case, the percentiles from number 3 here to number 6 would all be pretty close. And I'm putting Gukesh at 6. And, yeah, it's a little bit arbitrary, but I do feel of the Indians that Prague is stronger than Gukesh. And also Gukesh is 17, and I feel like, oh my God, 17. A little bit of a prejudice against a 17-year-old, right? I mean, like, for example, when you talk about, look at this tournament, and you talk about experience in this kind of event, well, you got people like Faruja, Fabi, Naka, Nepo. All these guys have incredible tournament experience, and Gukesh doesn't have it. But like I said, from 3 to 6, I do believe they're all fairly close.
Yeah.
David.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a tough prediction to make. I mean, Gukesh has been in reasonably good form. He's a player who has ups and downs. He can win a lot of games and still lose games. He's somebody who's still learning stuff at a really fast rate. And he has ahead of him some moment where he's going to make another big jump up. I think he's going to be over 2,800 at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously like pretty far from where he is now. So obviously he's going to have some jumps. But I think he's getting really close to the next jump. You know, like he's going to go into some tournament and just they'll just be like, oh, wow, he is much better than he was 3 months ago, because that's how he goes with these like just these sudden jumps. And it's hard to know exactly when the jump's going to happen in advance. I am going to be very conservative here and put him 6th and say it's going to be his tournament after the candidates.
Okay, yeah,
that he makes his next jump, but he's still going to take a couple lumps at this candidates. Like score wise, I think his score is going to be basically 50%-ish. Like I have him down in my points of scoring 7 out of 14. I think he'll score between 6.5 out of 7. Win 2 or 3, lose 2 or 3. But yeah, I think his big jump will maybe be a couple months from now.
Maybe I'll just add before Kosi goes, just for people listening, maybe, 2742 is where Gukesh is now, So it's not, the difference between that and 2780, 2760 is pretty significant. But, with the youth, you never know. You never know how it's going to go.
All right, interesting. Yeah. So I've also got Gukesh at 6. That's just kind of where it ended up. Yeah, he is super impressive. I also feel like he's a bit wilder in his play compared to Prague. And in a tournament like the Candidates, it's a long tournament, a lot of experience. If you're playing like wild, crazy positions every game, you might start bleeding a lot of points at some point, especially if it's not going well and you're not in good form. So he might also end up having fantastic tournaments. And also, let me just say, I don't think any player is going to be winless. I think every player is going to score points against someone. So yeah, anything can happen. But yeah, for me, it's like he's still young and it's like such a stressful tournament. So both he and Prague, it's like, ooh, it would be really hard for them, I feel like, to really show their best when, like, yeah, so much on the line, they're playing on the big stage. Hey, David, you're messing up the.
Yeah, you're messing it up, buddy.
Okay. All right, so we've all got Gukesh at 6 for also an average of 6 equal to Vidit. And yeah, let's see. I've got Prague at 5 myself. I think he and Gukesh, I mean, yeah, they could go either way. I give Prague slightly more chances. I just feel like he's a little bit older and maybe a little bit more solid. So I feel like he maybe he's going to do a little bit better. That was my reasoning.
Yeah. Prague is a hair ahead of Gukesh right now. I put him at 4th. He's really, really, really good. I think in the nature of their race, like at times Gukesh might jump ahead of him and then he'll slowly pass him again, and Gukesh will jump ahead. It's hard to say where they're gonna end up. These two are fantastic. But right now Prague is just a little bit in front of him and a little more stable. There'll be some more draws, although he also wins plenty. He's got a lot of new ideas, but on to you, Jesse.
Okay, this one I might change my mind on, but and this I think is my most controversial statement. But I'm putting Prague at 3, and
Third
the
place.
reason, a little bit, I've been very impressed with the kid's play of the Indians. I feel like he's the brightest star, and he is very hard to beat. He's a very good, resilient player. And I feel like when you think about how Nepo won it last time, it's like Nepo did it the old school way, where he looked to knock out a couple people, got a couple wins, and then just held. And I feel like that's a good, it might be boring, but it's a good tournament strategy for how to win an event like this. And one of the things with both all three, the bottom three, Gukesh, Vidit, and Abasov, is that the top players, Fabi, Naka, Faruja, they're all going to be like looking to win. And Prague too, they're going to be looking like these are the guys I got to knock out. We're going to really go for it with them. So one of the factors in all that is like, if you are resilient, you really stand a chance because it will get crazy. And I think it's going to be tighter. Then the whole tournament is going to be tighter than last time. Last one was weird, and there was this whole thing at, remember, just to recall everybody's memory, like they didn't know if Magnus was going to be playing, and then it was this weird thing where it turns out second place was actually a big deal, and it was a really bummer for Fabi. In any case, I feel like that madness helped increase the spread. Whereas besides Abasov sitting at the bottom, I think the rest of the field is going to be much tighter than it is going to be than it was in 2022. And therefore, a resilient player like Prague, who's got a lot of talent, I really think has a chance. Oh, and do I go again here? Does that the way it works?
Yeah, you go again for Nepo. Yeah. But let's recap. So we got Prague at 3, 4, 5 for an average of 4.
Mm-hmm. And then I think a lot of other people are saying Nepo's going to win this. And, you know, it's funny. In a lot of ways, I'm just recapping the prejudices I had last time around where I didn't think Nepo would really do that well. And, of course, he did. And so I have him at 4. Could he win again? Yeah, it's totally possible. But I really don't feel Nepo has, I know you can fight me on this, but I don't feel Nepo's actually ever had the form that the three people above him have shown. And in particular, he's made impulsive decisions. However, where Nepo is maybe strongest is tournament strategy. Like, the way he won it in 2022 was very clever and very prudent, the way he, you know, picked his wins and then just held. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he really murdered the bottom players at that tournament, the bottom three. And he used some things about their, you know, character against them, like report, you know, playing a line where you need to take a repetition.
Right.
You know, using that against him. So I think Nepo, who himself is kind of an unstable genius kind of type, he benefits from there being other unstable genius types in the field with him, right? Because he can sort of like treat them, like he can play against them the way he thinks people should play against him kind of, and he can, you know, score a bunch of points there. And basically, he only had one win against anybody in the top 4 or top 5 in the last candidates, right? And it was this game in the first round where Ding was just, like, arrived at the tournament and it was terrible, abysmal. All right, obviously got him very wrong last time. I'm going to rank him 5th after he's won the candidates twice in a row. At this rate, if he wins the candidates this year and in 2026, then by 2028, I will give him a top shot at winning the candidates. I will finally be convinced once he's won it 4 times in a row. But I mean, he just hasn't had a single good classical result since the candidates.
Yeah.
So I just can't see it. And, hopefully I'm less of an idiot here. We've got only 2 outsiders, maybe, instead of 3. We've got only 2 players who I really see him potentially massacring, Abasov and Gukesh. Suppose he could also beat Vidit and make it happen. I don't know. It could happen. I mean, he's certainly shown it can happen, but I don't believe it.
Wow. Wow, guys. Yeah, I mean, you just don't learn from your mistakes. I mean, look, Nepo, I actually feel like Nepo really changed starting for me. It was starting from the 2020 candidates that was then extended into 2021. That first game, I remember he beat Giri in this like super technical endgame, like queen against rook, I think. And I remember, like, that game and then the rest of that tournament, like, he just started showing this very, very different style. And I feel like he's just been a completely different player since then. Like, before that, we all thought of him as kind of like a wild genius, like attacking type of player. And then he started showing he can, like, play all these end games and play in, like, very positional fashion. And then, yeah, he wins 2021. And then none of us believed in him in 2022. And then he, like, wins. I mean, he was definitely the most solid player in that tournament by far. To be fair, like Jesse said, it was a lot having to do with, you know, Magnus and Caruana not knowing if Magnus is serious, Naka not knowing if Magnus, all these players like not knowing like if Magnus is actually going to give up his title or not. Nepo just kind of like cruising through the tournament. I don't know. I think it was a bit random. for instance, that game that like Rapport lost against Nepo, I feel like he could have also lost that game against Fabi. Like Fabi also plays the Petrov, and like that game could have easily happened against a different player. Okay, anyway, long story short, I have him as third, just because I feel like he's been super impressive. But like you guys, I don't think he is maybe, you know, like the top favorite. But I mean, yeah, it's just undeniable. He had two really good candidates in a row, and especially like, you know, he loses to Magnus really badly and then comes back. I mean, I think that shows some like really, really solid resilience. And then, yeah, he lost the last match, and I would imagine he feels like he can do it if he can just get back to the match that he can win. So I think his motivation is certainly still there. The experience is still there. He's done it before, you know. So to me, he, my top three, I feel like I'm pretty clear on.
Actually, I'll just add too, Nepo is now at 2758. I would probably feel better about Nepo if he was closer back up to 2800, but right, he's not. So that's the other thing we got to say about Nepo is, right, he's this great tournament player, but he's not past even 2760 at the moment.
Yeah, but everyone kind of went down. I mean, I think like...
Except for Fabi.
Except for Fabi.
And Naka. Fabi and Naka did not go down. Fabi.
Nepo's gone down more than average, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Certainly more than, like, the Indian teams. The players who are coming up, you know, you have to realize their performance rating is above their current rating because their performance rating brought them from 2,700 to 2,750. Whereas Nepo's performance rating in the last 2 years has brought him from 2,795 to 2,758, right? So it had to be quite a bit lower than them.
Okay, so for Nepo, we got 4, 5, and 3 for an average of 4. A lot of ties, actually. I was of 8. Gukesh Vidit both at 6. Nepo Prague both at an average ranking of 4. Okay, Faruja. I'm on Faruja.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, I got Faruja. He's my 7 pick. And, you know, I'm like, I'm sad
Evan.
To put him there. Yeah, but I was just thinking about it, and it's like, you know, honestly, I'm a little mad at him. Maybe that's why I'm ranking him so low. Because, like, last time, we had such high hopes for him. We all had him at, like, I think you guys both had him first. I had him second. Like, we had him really high last time. And what has Faruja done? You know, like, he got into fashion. Like, that was a serious thing. Like, he gave all these interviews where he's like, I'm doing fashion now. He moved to France. It's not clear that like how invested he is into chess. Then at the last second, he like makes an effort and then gets into this tournament, which is fascinating. I think he thought he was like going to get in just by virtue of his rating, but then he ended up losing so many points in the Grand Swiss that he had to like bounce back. And then he didn't make it in the Sinkfield Cup either. He was trying to get it back. And so, yeah, I just don't know, you know, where his head is at. So it's really, to me, he's like a total wild card. Like, obviously, he could win the whole thing, obviously. But, like, I just have no idea if, like, you got to prepare for the tournament. The last time he played, you guys remember, like, he stayed up all night playing Bullet. And then the next day, he loses to Nepo. Like, not a great game. Also, a bit of randomness. He could have lost that game to anyone. So, yeah. I mean, I'm happy to be wrong, you know, but it's just like, I don't know. I just got to give credit to the players that are like studying and like working and really like feel like they're motivated, you know.
That's supposed to have some relation to how you do, right?
Yeah. Actually, recently I heard someone say, just going back to Vidit, because obviously I ranked him higher. I think I heard someone say Vidit said something like, I don't know if it's true, but he said something like he quit streaming because he wanted to focus on chess. I'm like, yeah, that's the kind of thing that makes me think like, oh yeah, you're very serious.
Right.
And then there's also talent. But I agree with you that he's a wild card. Okay, I want to respond to one thing that Kostya said, which is that we don't learn from our mistakes. Or maybe that I specifically don't learn from my mistakes. I do learn from my mistakes, just very slowly, right? Like, you also didn't put Nepo first. You just put him
Correct.
more higher than I did. I am open to revising my opinions. You just have to prove something to me like four times instead of once. And then I'll be like, oh, yeah. So I'll get there eventually. Ferrugia, I feel like you could go either way on the guy. Like, you could rank him as, like, you know, first or second, saying, you know, talent, youth, whatever. You could rank him as Kostya did, seventh, and say just no sign of commitment. And for me, putting him third or fourth is kind of the hedging kind of position. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm doing with third, which honestly could also be fourth. Let me see. I think I might have him actually in my standings with the same points. Yeah. In my thing, I have him with the exact same points as Prague in my simulation, right? So this is third on tiebreak or whatever. And basically, it's saying, okay, he still does have some interest in chess and he does want to be at this tournament and he did some work for it. But he didn't do, like, all the work, you know? So I have a personal theory that after that stupid match thing, which was absolutely disgusting, in Chartres, that he then went to Rouen and played like a normal person's open mm-hmm. with a bunch of normal French weekend Swiss players who were really pumped to see him there and probably chatted with random people between rounds and like remembered what it was like when he wasn't a somebody and just had to go to a tournament and, you know, playing the masses, not roped off, not behind, you know, one-way glass or anything like that. And I think he was like, wow, this tastes really good, you know? That might just be me putting my own story on him, because right now I'm going through a thing where I'm like, wow, going to a tournament is so fun. But I think he recaptured a little of like that fun love of chess while he was in Rouen at that weekend tournament. And I think he got a little something back. So I think he'll show us something. I think he won't just be the dregs.
Mm-hmm. What a story. What a story.
All right, Boz, what are you going to put? Three, okay. All right. Yeah, okay, so for me, the big wild cards are Ferrugia and Naka, and let's just talk Ferrugia for a second. I'm putting him at two. I put him at one last time. At last time, he was also significantly higher rated than now. He dropped, and then he's made a little bit of a comeback. He's also a little bit older. He's 20 now. Has he matured? Like, there was definite immaturity in the last tournament, the whole story about the blitz all night, you know. And honestly, you know, you said you were mad at him, and I was mad at him because he kind of spoiled the tournament. It's like that game he lost to Nepo, we just kind of like, what have we done? What's going on here, buddy? But I do feel the kid is mature, and in terms of talent, it's like, oh, you got to put him up there, you know. There was a reason that Magnus was like, if this guy wins, maybe I'll play. You know, the kid was amazing and, you know, has to still be. So I'm putting him there at two. At the moment, he is rated 2760. He had to gain some points just to get back in there. Like he said, that was a little bit dubious the way it happened. But Ding did a similar dubious thing. And look at Ding, now officially world champion. However, maybe it's the karma of that whole event that's led him down some false path there. I don't know we don't know what's going on with Ding. Okay, now here's an interesting thing. I'm putting Naka at five. And it's, first of all, he is a sentimental favorite for me for a variety of reasons. Among them is what I began the show with, that I think if he won, it would touch Carlsen in a way to bring him back to reality, to being like, oh my God, I'm not going to last here forever. I'm not some super genius. I am a super genius, but these Indian kids are about to eat my lunch. I might as well make one more stab. And I hate Naka so much. I can't stand being there, man. I can't take it. Okay. With Naka, I want to kind of do a Dojo Talks just on Naka. And one of the things that's weird about it is, of all the players here, Naka's the one I've played a bunch since he was from a little kid. I played him, and then I played him a bunch of times later. So you'd think I'd kind of have a handle on him, but I don't. And one of the reasons I can't imagine him winning this thing is I feel that when he began his streaming business, it was because he was like, oh, I'm never beating Magnus. And so now I'm going to go do this streaming stuff because it makes money. And he had some positive feedback. People love him. It's nice to be an entertainer. He's making some money. Then even I came out on our show and he was like, you know, training for this stuff, dude, I'm making so much money streaming. Why would I be doing this? And, you know, after that show, I was like, oh, my God, can you imagine being 80 years old and thinking I could have been a contender? And then, like, what? I lost. What did you lose? $70,000 or something by not streaming during that time that you should have been training? Oh, my God, no. Of course you would want the shot at the title. So that's the problem. He has, I think, taken a couple months off to do a little training. The kid never really trained. That was one of the other weird things about Naka. Since the beginning, the guy was playing blitz chess all day. No one got it. And I'll say it again. I think Naka is the biggest talent America's ever had. Higher than Fischer. The guy never studied. He never even did the classics, dude. Still, of course, he had some technical shot. And what was the weird thing that we have to mention? When he started streaming and gave up on the high-tension chess, he did better. From a distance, it looks like he let the pressure go, just enjoyed the game, and then suddenly the results are coming. In the last year, the guy has been amazing. Right now, amazingly, being 27-89. So at age 36, by far the oldest person in this field, you know, he's got his best results ever. It's unusual. It's unusual. So there it is. Big wild card, but I have him at five.
Well,
yeah. Well, I guess the risk is for Naka, because, you know, he gave us this insight on into sort of what state of mind works well for him and why he's had this, you know, resurgence later on and why he couldn't break through earlier when he was putting too much pressure on himself. Because the danger is that he might, even though he's learned not to put pressure on, maybe he might feel pressure even if he doesn't want to, right? Like, he might start feeling like, my time's limited as well. This is like the year to become world champion. You know, maybe he invests a little bit too much in preparing for it and then feels the weight of that effort as pressure on himself. Where other people, the more you prepare, for some people makes you feel like, yeah, I've done the work. You know, I deserve this. I'm pumped mm-hmm. for it and all that. So I guess maybe the biggest danger for Naka is that he somehow feels some pressure. But I'm going to guess that he's actually, you know, matured enough and figured out what works for him. And he's just, I mean, he's just at such a high level right now. I think he'll probably hold it together and finish in rating order.
So you're going second for Naka.
Second for Naka.
Okay. Yeah, for me, my top two are actually pretty close. Actually, I did have a hard time deciding who I think is actually going to win it. Yeah, ultimately, I put Naka at two, but I think it is actually, I definitely think he and Fabi have the best chances of anyone. Yeah, I'm surprised by Jesse's five ranking, just because, like, I mean, Naka had the best year out of anyone, 2023, mm-hmm. the whole year. Did great at, like, Grand Swiss. And that's not a tournament he had to play. You know, he specifically signed up for that, you know, and, like, other stuff to qualify for the candidates. So to me, even though he says he doesn't care, I mean, come on. You got to look at a person's actions. He plays the Grand Swiss. He does really well. He qualifies. I believe lately he's been taking some time off from streaming to do some training. Not like all the time, but I think sometime. Like, he's streaming less. And yeah, like, I mean, I have so many things going for him. He's got all the experience. Last time he like almost got to the match. He was one draw away from Ding Liren to eventually make it to the match. I feel like that would kind of weigh on you a bit. Yeah, I feel like he is definitely good at like picking up points. So if some players start going like crazy or not in good form, like Abasov, Gukesh, Nepo, like I feel like Naka is definitely able to beat up on anyone. And he does pretty good against Fabi too. Like he beat Fabi at least twice last year in like super critical games. Like one in the Grand Swiss when he was white, and then one I think it was like the Super Bet Chess Classic or something when it was like for first place.
Yeah, so he won a great game. Yeah, he won a great game. Yeah.
So I mean, he's definitely capable of just beating anyone when like the title is on the line, which I think is also super important. So if he wins, to me it wouldn't be surprising at all. But okay, I've got him at number two. Obviously, that means I got Fabi at one. It seems like you guys also do, if my Sudoku is correct. yeah, I mean, look, Fabi's like, he's the only player above 2,800 right now. And yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say any player has better chances than he does. Reigning favorite, he's like won it before, he's very close last time, doing well lately. I mean, he's won like multiple tournaments, I'd say, in the past year. So,
hey Kosa, you should tell us how many points you think he's gonna win.
I have a hard time guessing points. I'm just gonna say nine points.
One thing I just put as the historical record last time around, we had Naka at, I had him at seven, David had him at five, and Kosi had him at six. And, you know, so I've moved from seven to five. You know, and you guys have, you know, more weight on the recent experience, the recent, you know, great result, you know.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, by now it's not just like, oh, he played a good tournament and qualified. It's like, he then played good tournaments for 2 years straight.
Right. After that. Yeah. But those tournaments, actually, he didn't play that many tournaments, you know.
He actually qualified for the candidates like a bunch of different ways. Like, I think officially he got into the World Cup, but he also would have gotten like the rating spot. And I think he would have maybe gotten like the circuit spot as well. Like, if he hadn't.
Yeah, Fabi qualified at least three ways, maybe four. He literally qualified like every single way you could.
So. Impressive. Okay, let's recap our rankings for the listeners. So we all got Fabi 1. Naka is the best average after that with 3. And then Faruja, Nepo, and Prague tied with 4. Gukish and Vidit tied at 6. And then Abasov, we all got an 8th.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm putting Fabi as winning with 8.5 points. And the significance there is just the spread. So the spread last time was 9.5, that's what Nepo got, to 5.5. And now I have it as 8.5 down to 4. But beyond Abasov being in the basement, I think the others will be more like 5.5 or 6, you know. So I think it'll be very tight in the middle. And, you know, let me just say a little bit about Fabi. One of the things that's remarkable about Fabi is, despite the guy's like pleasant demeanor, you know, he puts himself deliberately in the most wild situations, and he's very good at it. And so it's kind of controlled madness. And even these opening lines that he's doing, he's consistently putting himself in positions that might even be dubious, you know, but it's madness. And that, so it's like he's creating the madness. And so he will lose some games. And that's where it gets real interesting. You know, even if I feel like he's the best player, he is going to lose some games. Whereas I can imagine Nepo not losing, Prague not losing, you know. So this pick of Fabi at number one is mostly just because I feel like he's the best player there. But there's a lot of wildness mixed in with that prediction.
Yeah. I've been watching Fabi's games recently. I generally play through all the games of top players. And I think his game has gotten better. And it's obviously hard to judge when it's levels and levels above me. It's hard to evaluate. But when I watch what he's doing, and again, I'm also not comparing it to the evaluation bar or the computers or anything, so I really have no way to judge it. But when I watch his games, it looks like he's playing fantastically. It looks like he's really adapted to the computer era. It seems like he's really just like calculating all kinds of little like opportunities as they come up, little 2-3 move opportunities and how things are like changing and not messing with these grand old plans or anything like that. And he can play any position. He keep the pressure on. So I think he's definitely the top of the heap. That said, like in my scores, I have predicted 8.5 for Fabi, 8 for Naka, and 7.5 for Faruja and Prague. So that's 1 point separating four players. Obviously, that means, one blink, one lapse in concentration, or one opening preparation disaster one way or another, and you're in fourth place instead of first. And what I'm trying to get at with that is like also that I don't think the difference is that great between some of these top players. But I do think that Fabi's the best of them.
One thing, David, that's fun about looking back is you had him actually at four, and I had him at for 2022, and I had him at two. And I remember that was already, I believe, like Fabi had started to do a little podcasting, and I was upset at him as a fan. I was like, oh, dude, what are you doing? Are you going down the Naka road? And I think the charitable take is like it's his way to be a little social and talk to other people, and that he's not committing that much time to it. But on the other, so that kind of thing. Yeah, did disturb me. And I like your story about Vidit too. By the way, David, you had Rapport, dude, as number
I
two. I
was
was
just gonna
I
say.
remember. I remember.
You were pumped on that dude, man. You were like, this guy's gonna
Yeah,
do it.
this is my
I was
pick.
really pumped. And I made some very bold predictions on career trajectories, and today I've stuck with the ratings. More or less. I've made the least bold predictions in history.
True.
Which probably reasonable, I think. But to your point about the Fabi rankings, I think Fabi is more clearly on top of the world now than he was 2 years ago. Right? I think he was in a mini-ish slump at some point, right when he'd stopped working with Kazimjanov as his second,
Right.
and he dropped some points and something felt off. And now not only does nothing feel off, but I feel like he's also made some more adaptations to the current way the game is being played. Like he's made some adjustments to the computer era, let's say, even like faster or more accurately than the youngsters who've always been in the computer era. So I think he's actually stronger now.
Did you recently get mated? Well, it's time to join the Chess Dojo training program. Or maybe you just enjoy this fine content. Give us some money on the Patreon. I need to keep the lights on. And with inflation, it's really hard for Kostya to be buying that avocado toast. We've made a bunch of predictions. We did like our junior draft and all that stuff. And so, yeah, we got to come back and do a whole show just recapping all of these predictions we've made. And this will be fun to look back
Yeah,
on, I think,
absolutely. Well, the
especially.
junior draft, I mean, I think we're just gonna continue that. So that's just gonna keep running that. But yeah, this was good. I'm sure we'll also do a pod maybe in the middle of the tournament if a lot of stuff is happening or at the end to kinda sum up our thoughts.
And guys, before we wrap it up, I think there's a very good bonus question, which is if Abasov were not playing, like he just didn't show up, who would you wild card in?
Oh,
Who would
dude,
you like
Abdu
to?
for sure, man. Abdu for sure.
Yeah,
Come on.
quarterback. I mean, not even.
Okay. Same. So that's obvious. So then the follow up, given that there's nothing to discuss there, the follow up question is, if Abdusadarov were in this tournament, where would you rank him?
First place.
Where would you expect him to finish?
like three or four. Three or four, yeah.
Yeah,
Go
he'd do
up there,
well.
though.
He'd do well. He's number four in the world right now. I mean, it's insane.
Okay, I got a question. I got a follow-up. Kostya, now that you beat Fabi in a blitz game, didn't it change? Like, oh no, this guy can't be world champion, dude. No way, I beat him. There's no way.
No, I mean, it's one rapid game. If anything, no, now he has to become world champion. He has to.
Like
That's how I see it.
2024. the year that Fabi became world champion and lost to Kostya. Everybody knows 2024.
Oh my god, that would be great. What a story. No, it doesn't change anything.
All right.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Well, that's a wrap. We will, last thing, we will be covering the candidates. So we're looking forward to the event, and that means we're also going to be watching it, and we would love to watch it with all of you. And no eval bar, no evil bar, no real human mistakes.
Yeah, which is way more interesting anyway. In fact, I have some stories to tell you guys from American Cup after the pod's over.
All right.
All right, y'all. Take care. Catch y'all next time. Thanks for listening.